and welcome to the ULT in the city of Philadelphia. One of several lodges located all over the world. As you see, we open properly at 10:30 and we're beginning here at 11 and we'll be done by noon. As is our custom, before we read the details of the Philadelphia Lodge,
I can't hear you.
We will certainly provide you with a short reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principle of the philosophy of Theosophy, and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, of creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. If this is your first visit, we invite you to stop at the book table or at the usher's table on your way out and pick up a copy of this wonderful little pamphlet called "This To Spread Broadcast the Teachings of Theosophy as Recorded in the Writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge." This is the Philadelphia document, and in it you will find this information for the next 3 months. On Sundays, we've already mentioned what time the doors open and when we begin and when it's done. And today is July the 5th. The topic today will be the kingly knowledge. And of course, we'll be using a book by Robert Crosby, Universal Theosophy, which you will find a copy every Sunday right over there on the usher's table. If you would like to purchase that, stop at the book table. Because when the library opens during the week, you may be coming into the library and you have at least an hour or two to peruse all the literature that we have, and at the same time inquire as to where you may purchase certain books. During the summer months, we'll be studying the Bhagavad Gita on Wednesday nights. Doors open 5:15, and we begin at 7:15. In between, you can spend time in the library and familiarize yourself with the surroundings. There's a volunteer there and at the book table who will help you get a better idea of what takes place here. As we stated, we began our work this morning promptly at 11. Doors open at 10:30 will be done at noon. Does anyone have any questions? Address them to the volunteer who is in the chair here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, you sort of gave away the hint of what the kingly, quote, mystery is, that of knowledge. For those of you that have the Friendly Philosopher book, it's page 221. And of course, we're going to be starting on page 10. We will have summarized the first five paragraphs, and then afterwards we will open it up for questions, answers, and comments.
Morning. The kingly mystery. The kingly mystery is life itself. We all have life. We all are life. Every being everywhere is life, expresses life. To know what life itself is to know the mystery. The world is full of religious and philosophical false ideas, which must be discarded, thrown away. Our whole civilization is colored and steeped through with this falsity, which in its turn rests upon another equally harmful falsehood, that man is here on earth for once only. As a consequence, man acts as an irresponsible being, not shouldering responsibility for his actions. Again, we say we cannot know, or this life is all there is. Therefore, the whole force of our consciousness is directed in the line of that one false idea and inhibited in the expression of any other. The truth is, all directions lie absolutely open to us if we only understand our own natures. The kingly mystery of life cannot mean physical existence, which is merely one aspect of the great life. We have to go deeper into our own natures and into the natures of all beings in order to grasp what that great mystery is. From the one ocean of life, there tends to arise divinity. Divinity is always acquired. It's not an endowment. It does not exist of itself. There is no escaping law. No one can get us off from the effects of our causes. Each one has to see and know for himself. Each one has to gain divinity of himself. What is divinity? But all-inclusive knowledge. Divine spirituality is the power to know and see whatever is wished, known, or seen. It is the intimate knowledge of the ultimate essence of everything in nature. All-inclusive knowledge lies before every living being if he will take the necessary steps. All the great saviors of all times have never asked man to rely on some outside God, to fear some devil, to go by this or that revelation, to believe in any book, church, ology, or ism of any kind. They have asked him to take the step that the height of his calling demands, to know himself, to know his own true nature. They have shown that the real man must assert himself and must act in accordance with his own nature and the responsibility which the oneness of all nature demands. Man himself occupies the most important place in the whole scheme of evolution. He stands where spirit and matter meet. He has so to act, so to think and act in and upon and with this physical matter that he raises it all up and gives it another tendency, another trend. The secret doctrine states that man can become greater than any one of the Dian Shuans and equal to all of them put together. That is the goal which lies before him, the goal of the kingly mystery. And always, there is present the power of choice in one direction or another. The question before each human being are, whom will you serve? Will you serve the high spiritual nature or the body of flesh? Whom choose ye this day?
Thank you. So now we have opened it for questions, comments. Yes?
And you're saying this kingdom knowledge. So this is acquired through study, through book learning, through this is the kind of knowledge that you're talking about?
Partially. This idea of how do we get this kingly mystery? How do we acknowledge the most important question was close to the ending that was used. We need to look at ourselves and understand who and what we really are. That's the beginning of knowing it. And then once we get past that idea of, was stated, the one life situation, once we understand that we are the ones that through our decision and choices make what's going to come to us as far as experiencing in life. So it's no one else can eat our food for us. We have to start that search and look within, not without, within. And on Wednesday evenings when we have our Gita class, we can understand how that process is done of looking within to acknowledge who and what we really are. Yes.
So the statement is we need to understand who and what we really are. The implication there is maybe there's a lot of folks who whose ideas of who they are is wrong and that they would have to unlearn that. So what is it that people misunderstand about themselves that needs to be calibrated or changed?
Well, the first approach that would be a good basis is put aside all the ideas that we hold that was either given to us by our parents, families, things we have read, things we have seen. Put aside all those ideas and approach this idea of who and what we really are. We are spiritual beings. We're not here by some act of some outside God. We're not here by a fluke. I can't blame everything that comes to me in this lifetime on either my environment or my heredity. Those are all processes. We are that spiritual being within, that spiritual being that knows of all past lives. That idea of reincarnation and karma is a common understanding in the Far Eastern philosophies of life. Yes.
And it states in the first paragraph that when we decide to take up this path, it's a quote from the Gita, unto thee who findeth no fault, I will make known this mysterious knowledge. So part of the expression we have to assume is that we are all equal, we are all suffering, we are all doing the best we can, and stop looking out at what others are doing and start looking in at how we
guess that finding no fault is very important. That means, as was stated, if we're all from that one aspect of that universal all, then within us is the ability of all of us. We all have the same powers and development, but depending on any lifetime, how much one develops themselves and understands himself, he can express it. So we might be at different phases, but the power is there. It has to be tapped. And that comes through the experiences, through karma, through our lives of experience. Lives and many lives before have brought us to the point we are now. And it's interesting for those who are searching for answers that are not, let's say, what they've learned or what their parents have told them. This is a point where one has to start. You have to sort of start with a clean slate of looking for it. Yes?
It says from the Bhagavad Gita, the following sentence that has been previously read, it said that this secret knowledge will be given to the one who is not in a critical attitude. What does it mean by critical attitude?
A criticizer. Someone who's always finding fault in others, and maybe very seldom finding faults in themselves, because they're either not aware of it or they just look at it as a natural thing. So that is important, that idea of finding no fault and really looking at a much broader aspect. Way in the back.
That idea also goes back to the unity of the brotherhoods. It brings these messages to us. Each of them expresses it, not in the same language, but
right.
But the same message is expressed. And what it's expressed in the Sermon on the Mount, it's expressed in the Gita, as we said, but it's always expressing. One of the essence of it is that the student must be humble. He cannot put himself up to challenging the teacher, whether it's the inward teacher or teacher outwardly. He must humble himself. He must divest himself from all of his worldly good, all of his worldly knowledge, what he learned in college, what station he has achieved in life. That does no good. He must divest himself of all of that and submit himself to learning about himself, his true self.
And there are guidelines all down through the ages that have been left by great adepts, masters, great sages, the East. And another thing that's very important when you think about it, all these teachings that have come down have never changed. Even though the times are different, situations are different, there are basic truths in all of the universe and all in nature, and they never change. Yes.
Well, there has been a change, and that change 2,000 years ago or so is our teachings based on separatism. And doesn't this philosophy say that there is no separatism? As we look around the room and we see the physical shells being used by individuals, there is the individual, there is the oneness. So this critical attitude, I will find no fault, is actually an outgrowth of that heresy of separateness, isn't it?
Well, we can say it that way, but if we go prior to the separateness that was brought forward by churches, by different social religious groups, all taking aspects of that original true teachings that is at the base of most of the Eastern philosophy. And they brought apart the changes and that idea of a go between myself and, quote, my maker. we have priests, we have rabbis, we have pastors. The ancient philosophy said we only really need ourselves to be the judge of our own development, no one else's. So there's the difference. As the outer sides change, that inner never changes. It says, truth is truth. Yes, way in the back.
The fourth paragraph from the end of the article talks about divinity is always acquired.
Yes, which is six.
The last paragraph.
Divinity lies latent in each,
right.
In each one of us.
So that kind of gives us a hopeful feeling, knowing that, you know, it talks about responsibility, that we have to take the responsibility ourselves, but at least we know if we do that, that we have that chance of letting that divinity come through.
Right.
That it's there, but we just have to let it come through and be open.
Yes, as it finishes, divinity lies latent in each one of us. All powers lie latent in every one, and no being anywhere can be greater than we may become. And then that next line in the next paragraph, it tells us, what is deity but all-inclusive knowledge? True spiritual knowledge tells us it doesn't have a hazy condition. It is a fact, as was stated earlier about brotherhood. Universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. We are all part of that one. We are all brothers and sisters in a way under that one. Each one of us has to look within ourselves and find that part of our nature that sort of knows sometimes ahead of time, like, I don't think I should do it this way. This might not be right. The questioning, we have so much noise from the outside, we don't know how to listen to that voice of the silence, as it says inside. That part of us that has gained knowledge and is sort of the recorder within us that has kept note of all the knowledge we have gained. And if we could but tap it by silencing all the outside effects, would make a big difference in the way we live our daily life. Yes.
The reality about the world in which we live, selfishness reigns supreme. And I'm a part of that society. I'm a part of this whole thing. I'm not separate from it. So if I'm to make a change in the world, I can only change myself. I can't change anybody else.
True.
I can only change myself. So in that idea of finding no fault, is that we need to look at ourselves from that point of view and see where we're selfish, because we all are. It's just that we manifest it in different ways, and, you know. And not that you have to stop, but you have to realize what we're doing, you know, and how we're acting. And I think this is what our study is, as students of life, is that we have to watch those things in ourselves and take note of them. That's where our journey lies, not outside or not. You know, we come together in these rooms to join our thinking together into an atmosphere of brotherliness, and we are told that we all benefit from that. So even though we're selfish, I think that's where our journey begins.
And we have to question the amount of selfishness. For most people, they're more concerned about what other people think of them than what we really think about ourselves. Like, it doesn't take a scientist to know there's a part in our nature that knows, that tells us. It's like that angel and the devil, little figurines on either side. We know when we're doing something that's not right, not balance, not harmony, not universal. And this idea of selfishness, to all the degrees, we again make too much of outer things. This idea, for instance, of the use of meditation is a very good part to start with. For some, just to quiet all that outside noise that comes through us, just to quiet that for 5 minutes can be very hard to do. Then there are those that can put their mind at rest, control it when it runs off here or runs off there, to bring it back to one-pointedness, is the term that's used in the East. Find something to think upon that you can hold yourself to the attention, and for how long can you? Pick something universal if you're going to think about that. But we do know that most of us look in the mirror, we see this, quote, personality, and we think that's what we are. But then there's that other part of our nature that does come through once in a while, that individuality, that observer, that one that can see this is right, this isn't right. And maybe try to listen to that a little bit more often than we normally do. And by each one changing himself in a way, wouldn't you think if there's this whole idea of universal brotherhood, others can see and see the change within us. Not just us, but others can see the change. And others can see it's possible they too can enter that path of having that middle path, not too high, not too low. And a lot of the outside noise, we learn how to control it. And we start making judgments within ourselves. This I will try to do. This I will no longer try to do. We have to put something in that place because it's like a habit. Once you have a habit and you've worked on it so long that it is a habit, how many of us know how hard it is to break this habit? You need to fill that area. Yes.
Sometimes it sounds overwhelming when we think about selfishness. You know, as Westerners, as Americans, we have these internal drivers that we've acquired, you know, be perfect, be better, be stronger, etc. And it might help if we think about how the sun rises, that there's a process that's very gradual. So if we start out as selfish, we can become more self-centered and then more self-conscious. It's a process of growing towards selflessness, and it may not be so overwhelming after all.
And it's, again, it's a process. You know that statement, be all that you can be? That's it. Every time you think of it and do it, you're working up a channeling of the purest coming through you and being able to be expressed. Don't try to be what somebody else is. How is this the best I can be as a human being? And not just to quote human beings, to all of nature, to animal life, to plant life, to this whole universe. We're all on a journey. And it's, for some, it's gonna take us a heck of a long time and many, many lifetimes. For others, depending on what they've already done in past lives to gain that kingly mystery within. They might come to these ideas very naturally. They make sense to them. They're more calm in just being. And try to visualize going to a function or a party. And sometimes you're drawn to certain people, and other times something just says, well, no, I don't think I'll talk with that group. I want to go this way. Where do these things come from? Nobody's announced it. You can sense in another individual of whether you want to be with them or you don't want to be with them. A lot of these are natural things that come with learning. If not in this lifetime, we can definitely cross it up to past lifetimes, because in this lifetime, we might just go, I just don't understand why this is always happening to me. Why me? And gosh knows we use that expression a lot. Yes.
And in the idea of replacing the old habits of thinking with something new, we've heard in these rooms that the truth has a certain ring to it, a certain vibration that captures our attention. And when that happens, we should really take time and look at that idea and spend some time with it, whether it's meditating or making notes as things come into our mind, because the ideas are all around us. It's just what we choose to pay attention to. But the truth vibrates and rings differently from falsehood.
Definitely so. We have been told. And for some of us, we might have experienced once or twice in just this lifetime something we could not explain, but it has made a change within us, and it also brings a comfort to us. We don't have to keep up with this rat race. Each one's in their own little rat race of their own. Yes.
You spoke about the little voice inside and that we should listen. I'm assuming you're referring to our higher self. My question is, don't you think that most of the evils in the world, the wars, the savagery, could be avoided had we had the capacity to listen to our inner voice a little bit louder, a little bit easier, with a little bit greater access, so to speak, and then we could actually make this world a better place? I mean, why is it that this little voice so distant and so difficult to get in touch with?
Well, because we've layered it with so many layers of what's here now and what can I see, what can I touch, what can I taste. We're relying on our outside senses. We're relying on other people telling us what to do. There was a time period in this, quote, process of evolution where there was what was called like a golden age, where everything really was balanced, where you didn't really need to verbalize with your voice an idea to another. They would sense it. They would know it. There was a purity state. But in this whole vast period of evolution, you have to go through different states. And as was stated, you can only develop what you have the capacity to develop. Not somebody else's capacity, our own capacity. So in that character, it would seem, if that has been, and it will be part of evolution again with this whole system of the purification of ourselves, and to the point where we don't need this dense physical body to communicate, that golden age will come again, but we have to go through other great periods of evolution and stages to work our way back or not move at all. Yes.
We recall that in the reading of the Declaration, the term independent devotion was mentioned. And thinking back, go back to a period, I think it's Garibaldi and the Red Shirts restricted the papal authority to a few square miles, not even a few square miles, called Vatican. It was a war of independence. And since that time, in 1875, we brought the teachings of universal theosophy. All through it, independent devotion is mentioned. So it appears what we're saying here is that I can think, therefore I am. So with this idea of independent devotion and the three fundamental propositions, and what we do know of our own war of independence, 1775, and yes, 1865 also. So it would seem that in the meaning it said, divinity is always acquired. But in order to acquire, we first have to be independent and stand on our own feet. So I think what this article is showing us, that we're in these teachings, we can see that we can do it ourselves independently and understand the meaning of universal brotherhood. That's a fact. We think this chapter is trying to point to us. Yes.
That idea of independently, as stated, for most of us, we're not really, unless we're concerned with it, and really trying to gain some knowledge, we're not thinking independently. We're thinking of what has been read, what has been said, who said it, where we've heard it. Again, it's not our own individual self that's finding this out, because we've just, like a sponge, sucked up all these different things from the outside, and we said, oh, this is what I believe. But our beliefs have changed. Think back how you thought when you were very young, then when you went through the teenage ages, all the changes. And it seems that the age that we're in development now, the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age as it's called from the ancient teachings, it's very dense, it's very fast moving, and it's going so fast that if we use that independentness within us, our higher self, as was stated, our true individual observer, we could probably gain more in this age than we could in any other age, because it's moving faster. But with this moving faster, there's a lot of confusion out there. And for each one, depending on where one wants to be, that's where their growth will come. And for most of us, it would be go with the crowd. But then whatever happened to the idea of stand ye separate and observe, then you might find out, I don't want to be part of this crowd. Yes.
But isn't that theosophically a unique stance? Because while you're looking at this kaleidoscope of behaviors of the crowd, that's an illusion.
True.
The lesson to the kingly mystery is to be able to see through those apparent differences and not criticize them and identify with the spirit within each and all moving in that way.
Definitely, that is a very good point. Again, to take that first step, it has to have some sort of balance. If we're not at that point yet, we could get ourselves in a lot of trouble. But the idea, if you keep that same idea with the idea divinity is not a gift, it's something that must be acquired. And if we have within us that point that can express itself, then it would seem, don't we have the obligation to at least try to look and see, does it make life different for me? Way in the back. And yet, do we honestly know what that individual is within himself expressing? Do we honestly know what might have brought it to this point? We don't know that. And again, when we use that idea, everything, when they say is Maya, illusion, on this plane, it's very true. And there are ways that you can scientifically point out that there is a point of illusion, that it's not really what it seems to be. But since we do not know what brings an individual to a point of doing, quote, whatever they did, that, quote, is unlawful, man-made lawful, we don't even have a point of judgment to be made of anything, just a sign of some sort of pity within yourself that that individual has to go through that situation. And it might not be gained in this lifetime, but eventually enough situations of that sort could bring an individual to start to question. Yes.
Incidentally, aren't we looking at, in that particular circumstance, we're looking at the being, but the kingly knowledge dictates that we should look at the be-ness.
Good point. Yes, because again, it's from the outside, what you see from the outside. It's the same thing when we look in the mirror. What we see, is that the real? Is that all there is to me? Yes, way in the back.
Well, with regard to that, really, whether the observer can actively see the divine in the other the way maybe an adept would see it so clearly,
right.
You know what? What speaks volumes about the observer is that A, she's not condemning the other person, and that B, she really at least is looking to find it. So that speaks volumes for one's own place and one's own direction that they've taken. So just seems keep on keeping on, you know, that's what compassion's all about.
True compassion, yes.
And compassion is an interesting term, because if we see a degree of anger or vitriol or violence and we're puzzled by it, we can use that to create a new habit. See something that appears to be repugnant to our sense of conscience, and therefore we can turn and think, is there a time in life when I have experienced those emotions? What triggered those and how can I offset them? Because if we're part of a spiritual collective and we're bringing all these latent powers to focus on anger and vengeance and
Yes. We have the expressions, thoughts are things. All around us, not just in this room, but all around us all the time, these thoughts that are real, that are things, are floating through the air. There are some individuals who can be easily affected by those thoughts, whether they can be good thoughts, and they can be, quote, not so good thoughts. They can be evil thoughts. But the fact of the matter is, if we are in control of ourself, we can also put, shall we say, like a barrier around us for everything that's floating, that's coming into our minds and going out of our minds, and maybe coming into our minds and starting to click and build on something. It's like cleaning out our own closets. We have to be in charge and be aware that there are, within the atmosphere, all sorts of vibrations going around, and anyone can be affected by it, or they can not be affected by it by the way they think and where they hold their balance part of their nature. Yes, you had a point? Yes?
It says in these teachings that there are only two paths. One path is towards adeptship, the other path is toward passivity. So for us to realize or have no doubt in that we have the potential to be divine is what we need to struggle against, I think, because we've been taught that we're sinners. We've been filled with so much doubt of our own natures that those are the kind of ideas we need to overcome, I think.
And those ideas are what take away that independent devotion within us, because it's making us rely on someone else to do it for us, to clear it up for us, to make it better for us. Whereas we're the only ones that can make that change, whether it be good or bad, harmony or disharmony. It's not outside of us, it's within us. And for some who maybe didn't have a strong religious background, that idea could easily take over for us, that could make the big change in our life when we look at the idea, everything that's coming to me, good, bad, or indifference, is something I've set some sort of magnetic tie to before, and now it's coming. And as we said, just same idea with that bad habit. If you want a bad habit to go away, you better find something of a stronger value that you can put in its place, and be prepared to understand it's going to take a while till that dies out. Yes.
With regard to that, we think it was Mr. Crosby's statement about that. When you are moving to a new place, you don't think about the old furniture. You think about where the new furniture is going to fit in. So with the habit, you don't concentrate on the feeling, the thought, the old habit and what it gave you. Rather, you concentrate on what you're going to replace it.
Look forward, look within. Thou art Buddha. Why are these statements still alive today? There must be some truth to that. Yes.
Well, when it comes to current events in the world, whenever, it really doesn't matter now or in the past, we really have to look at the karma, which is action, that these seeds have been sown, and we will reap what we have sown. All the religious strife, the fanaticism that's now around, it said that the reincarnation cycle is about 1,500 years. So if we go back 1,500 years, we have the fall of Rome and the beginning of the Crusades and everything else. So these people are coming back with these skandhas, these tendencies, they're electromagnetic, and it's energy. It's raw energy, and it must manifest until the problem is resolved. It's sad, of course, but it's a fact.
And it will eventually be over. There are beginnings and endings all through life. But there is that one part that is observing the beginning and endings. And as they come and go, we're observing it. We're still here. We're accountable. It's fascinating to think about, because depending on how one was brought up as a child, to even think this would be a sinful thought, that I can do it all by myself. But on the other hand, it's overwhelming to understand there's that much depth and power that is available to me in any one time, any one lifetime, if I would put an effort to investigate it. And then, you know, we talk about the powers. There's, if we look at the idea of the good magician, magician, and the evil one, the same knowledge can bring wealth, can bring famine. It's how we use it. And unless we ourselves go out and check things out for ourselves, so that we within ourselves can make the decision, not someone else's, we're never going to be able to gain anything. And then upon gaining it, how we're going to use it. If one takes a lifetime and takes the same knowledge and uses it in a selfish way, very automatic, versus the individual who does not use it for selfish motives, you have the idea of, well, this one's good and this one's bad, but it's the same knowledge, because it's how the knowledge is used. What we can take of the ancient knowledge and understand and bring within our nature, we can also learn to express it within our nature. Yes?
Regarding the previous point, you know, we're all experiencing karma and the causes and effects of our previous actions, whether in this life or early lives. But to simply sit there and accept that is a very defeatist attitude. I mean, knowing and understanding that the law is operating as the law should is one thing, but to just say, well, this is my karma, I'm just going to take it in and just chill, you know, what about evolution? What about your own willpower? What about your desire to evolve in the direction that you choose to evolve in? I mean, that cannot possibly be overlooked. The will, the humanity, is the only species of the universe that has been given the power of will. Animals don't have it, plants don't have it. Let's use it. Let's evolve.
Oh,
in the
now
proper
wait.
Direction.
That point you don't know of. That unity of intelligence that's in the animal kingdom or even in the vegetable kingdom has intelligence and probably knows more of balance than we, quote, as human beings. So, but just because...
Will. I don't see rocks willing to move from one spot to the next. I don't see plants willing to grow an apple when it's in north.
They don't have, quote, self-consciousness. What they have is natural impulses. They're still at a purer state than we are, because we have the power of choice and we have the power of using our will one way or another. But this idea, yes, a situation is coming to you. if you've been through this situation enough times, it would seem you're gonna get to the point where you need to know why. The investigation has to be done by us, and it's our attitude and our motive of how we will approach any situation coming to us that can let us know if it's gonna keep coming or if I've learned a new way of looking at this, that my eyes have been blinded. So even though it's not like, you know, well, this is my karma, I'll just accept it. Just because it's coming to you, it's a lesson to be learned. It could be your lesson not to have it come to you anymore. You better start to understand why it keeps coming to you. Way in the back.
Theosophy never said, it's my karma, I'll just
yeah.
let it go. Theosophy always said, number one, recognize that it is yours. You set it into motion.
Right.
It's returning to you. Now you can use the will to react and set a better cause into motion. So when it returns, it's got that with it as well. And the rock has the will to hold the spark that could create fire.
That's
which
true.
Is an element of the universe. The plant turns toward the sun to survive. The dog, who really wants you to pay attention to him, will eventually climb up on your lap and lick your face until you do. And that's quite a bit of will. Not what we would call self-conscious will, but it is present. It's we have to search it out and understand it. But yes, we never said be passive about your karma. Be active.
Be active. Yes, because you're the one it's getting it. So if we look at life as a school and it's always lessons after lessons to be learned, that's what we're really doing. So it's not just lay down and I'll just go through this again. Something inside you will push you one way or another. Yes.
Did not exist in the colonial days for everyone. And when we read such things as the Declaration of Independence, the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, let alone the Emancipation Proclamation,
I know we have to wrap it up.
Rights, okay?
Time.
Well, by study or otherwise, pointed out in these teachings to do our own investigation, not to accept
right.
that we know all there is to be known. And the personality is done away with, and we begin to possess that kingly knowledge, the kingly mystery. And it is not a difficult thing to do if that is your
is up.
And that we can do our own thinking based on fundamental propositions.
Okay. And our time is up, so.